Testing.
Help if I actually turned it off.
Recording commission here of July 22nd. Our apologies for a little delay. We've got some technical people that are working on some things, and they're going to continue to do that while we at least start the meeting here. Let me just ask again for people on the telephone. Teresa, I know you're there. Mitchell, is there anyone else on the phone? No other phone caller in? Okay. Just to let everybody know, we've sent another email out to members telling them about the telephone technical delay, and if they were available, they could still call in, and we were just going to start the meeting here. It's about 2 minutes after 2 o'clock when we're going to convene our meeting at this point. So let's first of all deal with the agenda. Any additions, modifications, or suggestions for the agenda that any of the members have?
Mike?
Yes.
Can I add, we want to look at original signatures on paper documents and electronic signatures. If it has been defined a little clearer than what's in the statute, I've had a couple questions asked about that. Any discussion on that?
Original signatures on electronic documents?
On paper, and electronic signature.
And electronic on paper? Yep. Okay, we'll put that under other business. Any other items for members? Hearing none, we'll stand with the agenda. And I think we just had someone else call in. Did we have somebody else on the telephone that just joined us?
Yes, this is Bonnie Rader from Clay County.
Oh, welcome, Bonnie.
Hi.
We've had a few little technical issues, so we're glad people are able to finally get in. So thank you. We'll go on to item number 3 on the agenda, the minutes from the meeting last month. If members have had a chance to review those, want to take a minute, and then I'd entertain a motion for the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
It's been moved to approve the minutes. Do I hear a second?
Second it.
Let's see. We got how many seconds here? Kay, was that you?
Yes.
All right. We'll have Kay second the minutes. Any discussion on the minutes? Not hearing any discussion, we'll vote. All those in favor of approving the minutes as written, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the minutes stand approved. Let's go on to the next item on the agenda, which is to really get to the meat of our meeting today. We do have some guests here with us this afternoon from the Department of Revenue that we're very appreciative of them taking the time to come back and meet with us again as they were here last month. And I'm going to, I guess, turn it over, John, to you, perhaps, and you can kind of introduce what you want to do. This is our friends from the Department of Revenue to kind of give us an update of where we're at now in terms of the efforts for the electronic certificate of real estate value here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. For the record, my name is John Hagan. I'm director of the Property Tax Division, and we're extremely pleased to be here. Last month when we were here, we talked about a couple of potential workarounds for the to try to facilitate the transition between the paper CRV and the electronic CRV process, which aid your group. At the time, we proposed two possible options, a paper option, which was slightly better than the existing CRV option. I think it eliminated some of the copies. And as a viable option, we also proposed a potential of maybe developing an electronic process for submitting the CRVs that would be, from my lay perspective, from a submitter's perspective, from a title company or a closing company, would be very similar to the final ECRV process. And our promise, and I believe this committee greatly endorsed the second proposal. They weren't too crazy about the first because they didn't see it as a step far enough ahead. And we agreed with that. So our commitment to you was to go back and try to get an estimate of how long that would take and how possible, how difficult that would be to accomplish. We did go back and made some extraordinary progress in my estimation. With me today is Don Freelander, who's the director of the IT group. I think that's his appropriate title. Who's sort of in charge of all the IT responsibilities for the Department of Revenue. Jim Biggs, who was with us last month, and John Watrick, who was also with us last month, are under him. And, of course, Jason Parker works in our division, has been working this process for a very long time. When we first went back, the first thing we did is, in addition to Don Freelander and Jim Biggs and that group working on trying to see what it would take to accomplish the second proposal, the second workaround alternative, went to work on, as did Jason Parker, trying to identify what it would take to make this work. While they were doing that, we also met with the ECRB steering team, and we met with the business practices team, business practices planning team, or something like that, who controls a lot of money within the Department for Technology. And they, as we'd said before, were so committed. Commissioner Kadoon made a strong pitch for more financial resources still, in addition to the ample resources we're putting behind the ECRB project. And we managed to leverage the equivalent of two more full-time equivalents to work on the ECRB project for the next year. So we're doing everything possible to facilitate this and to make it happen fast, and things are working remarkably fast. I'm happy to report to you. As I said before, the department's very, very committed to see this through and to move it fast. And Mr. Freelander and Mr. Parker are doing everything in their power to bring this about. So Jason Parker's going to give a brief presentation of where we're at right now, and I'm guardedly optimistic you're going to be extremely pleased with the progress that's been made by the department.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Jason, it's all yours. Have we got
Thank you.
Connectivity?
Thanks for coming. I've got a document here that describes how to do e-reporting using the front-end form for ECRB, which we will be making available for testing very shortly. So, unfortunately, I was going to run through the process actually live for you, but we cannot VPN out of this location. So I will be going through the items in this document. I have some additional copies. We can stand around here.
I'm sorry. Thanks.
But I'll also be displaying this on the screen, which, of course, you'll probably enjoy reading your paper document a lot better. But the first item is that pretty much as we described last time, we are going to be making the ECRB front-end form available for e-recording. We did have to make a change to the process, in particular what's printed for the receipt, because the paper process that the county will continue to use, the existing form has fields that the county hand enters in on the existing form. That wasn't part of our ECRB. Clearly, because that's not how ECRB works. The county logs into ECRB and fills out those fields via the form. So we had to do some programming changes, and that was one thing that we realized a week ago. So kudos to the development team for being able to quickly come up with an alternate receipt process. It's not just that the receipt looks different, but depending on which county is being picked, if the county is doing the e-reporting process but not full ECRB, they have to be routed to the correct receipt because it looks different. So there's that was one major difference here that was not really discussed at the last meeting. And in the document on one of the, I think the fourth page, is an example of that part of the receipt. And one difference, we talked with some counties, and we talked with the reps. The fields that are in that section are laid out the way they will be for ECRB. They are not laid out to mimic the existing paper form. There was a number of reasons about that as well. One of the reasons is that some of the, in fact, a good chunk of 25% or so of the fields that are in the existing form are actually obsolete. So why create and mimic that form when, in fact, it's really obsolete? We want to be moving people towards the full version of ECRB. Also, the naming of the labels is much less cryptic in this version than they are in the paper form, so that's an advantage. But it will be a change. And for counties that are doing e-reporting, they will have to adjust for the fact that this is the printout that they will receive, and this is what they will be entering when they are doing their part of the CRB process. So I wanted to point that out. When a county then, or when a submitter goes to the ECRB form, they can select the county that's receiving ECRB. So that county has to be placed in that list. And we don't want to be placing counties that aren't ready to record ECRVs or counties that are not using the full ECRB process. And as a result, we need counties to tell us that they are going to receive these. So that's why we have a county registration process. In addition, we have the submitter registration process. And part of this, early on at least, is so that we know that everyone is on the same page of knowing what to do and how it works. And that we have limited support process, so we can't just be fielding calls suddenly from the entire state. So that will, make the adoption a little bit more stable over time. If the system begins to be working very, very well, we can explore ideas for maybe expanding its use beyond those. But right now, we really need submitters to register and for counties to register to let us know that they're going to be using it. And we can get the counties then in the list. And then when counties receive it from submitters, they are ready and know what to do when they receive that. Otherwise, the diagram that's in the document is essentially unchanged from the diagram that was presented at the last meeting in terms of what occurs. And just to recap again, the original submitter goes to the ECRB page. They fill out the ECRB form with the CRB information, selecting the county that in this case would be an e-reporting county. Then they would include the resulting PDF that is received on the receipt page. And I'm going to go ahead and scroll to example of the receipt page. So here's an example of the receipt page. I think that's number 3, page 3. And this is slightly different than the receipt page then that is received for a county using the full CRB. Because in a full CRB case, all they need to do is save the CRB ID. Because the county will be logging back into the ECRB later to retrieve the information. But in the e-recording case, the county is not logging back in to receive the CRB information. So you have to save the PDF and include that in your e-recording package. So the instructions on the receipt page are different for the e-recording case. And in particular, they say, save your CRB. And it's also true that if you leave this page, you can't get back to your CRB. Because we are not persisting that information in our local system at this time. The counties are not retrieving it, and there are a number of reasons for that, which I'm not going to go through right now, but this is the key page that you really need to save your PDF, and then you can include that in your e-reporting package. Your questions about that part of the process?
Yes.
Janine.
I just need to understand.
Yes.
Okay, so under the CRB ID number, in electronic recording, there's no way to get back to that information? They've sent it to you electronically.
Right.
But the county can't go in and see that information.
That's the compromise to do a quicker rollout.
Okay. No, I'm just trying to make sure
yes,
I understand
correct.
That. So then we have to they have to create a paper copy of it.
When the county receives the e-recording, it'll have a PDF included. When PDFs are a viable part of your e-recording package, and then the county would print that PDF.
Okay.
And then that PDF, and that's why that page 4 is now part of that PDF.
Okay, now I understand that, but the And that's what, that's when you said it's full electronic reporting. Then you said if it,
if when a county is using the full ECRB system, then all that the submitter would have to remember is the CRB ID, because the county would, because they're using the full system, they're logging into the system and retrieving the data that way, as long as they have the ID.
So eventually we will get a full system.
Absolutely.
This is just the,
this is a workaround to get to that point.
All right, I'm happy then.
And just so I understand, Jason, so as a title company, a submitter, going into the function on the website for the DOR, we will have to have all of our information and enter it in that single time. Cannot go
correct.
Back in, save a little bit, and add the last.
Correct. Now, as we discussed at the last meeting, we know that that's a feature request that is will be evaluated for implementation, and there's two parts of that.
Okay.
Discussion. One is the resource costs and when we do it relative to other feature requests, and actually the one before that is the policy discussion on whether it's something that really we should allow or can allow. You know, and so the full policy discussion has not occurred either. And that would be done in conjunction not only within revenue, but you know, with counties and with submitters and with this body as well.
Okay. And for the registration process, do you envision, I assume, a one-time registration
correct.
For each submitter as opposed to each time they go in?
Absolutely. It's a one-time registration. And it's designed to be just an email thing. So, you know, they fill out the little Word doc and then send it in via email, you know. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, we're expecting that the volume is not going to be, you know, huge. But we want to know who's doing it so that we can, it'll help us on support, and it'll help roll it out a little bit more, you know, easy rather than, and I think it'll help limit a little bit of the confusion, because that touch base point is when we can really make sure they understand how the process works. Whereas if we don't have that touch base, they'll just start trying to use it, and they may not understand what's going on. And so that's what the last two pages are, is an example of the submitter request for the ECRB system, you know, essentially just saying that, you know, look, we want to use ECRB, and it's an acknowledgement that they need approval from revenue to do so, and we'll just email back a confirmation. And then there's the last page is the county version, which just says that the county says, yep, we know e-recording can come our way, and we're ready to do that as well. And that's also just an email. And so there will be links on our website for getting these documents, and a web page describing the... and all those pieces, by the way, have been defined and are ready to go. We're in the active point making doing our sort of final review, edit reviews, and you know, wordsmithing or commas and periods, and then we'll publish them. We'll probably be up and running it for a test version maybe next week. So we've got identified right now that we would like to start testing with Clay, Lyon County, Martin County, and maybe St. Louis. I was hoping that Mark would be here today, but I don't see him in the room. So.
This is Bonnie from Clay County.
Yes, Bonnie.
I'm wondering when, Jason, when you talk about the submitter, are you talking about U.S. Recording as a submitter or all of their customers as submitters?
Well, that's a good question. Who is signing the CRB? I guess it's the entity or person that's signing the CRB, or maybe it's the. I guess it'd be U.S. Recordings in this case,
or the closing company,
or the title company. What I see here, Jason, is that because the ID page. With the PDF of the CRB that's going to be included in the e-submitter package, that is something that XYZ Title Company will be scanning in with the rest of the reporting package and submitting through their chosen vendor or if they're a direct service directly.
It could be either. I guess, you know, one of the issues is that, you know, someone that's going to use the front-end form, they need to be sort of aware of what the process is and how it works. So, you know, if U.S. Recordings is acting in a sort of as a in on behalf of their customers and sending this the submit thing, I think that's okay, as long as they're also, you know, educating, you know, the people that are actually filling out the form how it works.
When I fill out, if I'm a customer and I fill out my ECRV form and I hit the save button to get the PDF.
Yes.
If I forget to hit the save button, you're not going to generate a number for me? I can't go back in and get it?
Nope. The save button is saying I'm ready to get a PDF and a number.
Okay. So you will generate a number when I hit the save button?
Yes. But the number in the e-recording situation is not going to do a lot of good because you can't come back in later and re-retrieve your CRV.
So we need to print it, the PDF first.
Well, you need to save the PDF.
The submitter needs to save it. So
yes.
If the submitter is Russ and he's using a vendor as a third party to submit all of the package, he needs to make certain that that PDF gets to the vendor that you're using to submit, whether it's a U.S. recording or Simplifile or NGO or whoever it might happen to be. And let me ask a question. Is there any problem with the fact that we now have a standard for documents have to be in a TIFF format of combining documents that are both TIFF and PDF in one electronic package? We create that as a standard. Now, the CRV is not a recorded document, so I did have a little chat here with Sean before our meeting, and when it comes to documents that are not going to be maintained for a long time, they have less concern about the format of the document than when it comes to documents that have to be maintained in perpetuity,
mm-hmm.
which is where we're at on the real estate documents. So that becomes an issue that I think we don't have to, we can have Dean probably do a schema that would make it possible to accept in the PDF.
My understanding from Dean in the last meeting is that yes, the PDF can be included, but the definition of what the e-recording package standard has to change to allow it.
Right. Right.
I talked to Pam as well. She said that she didn't think that was a big change. We just have to make that change. To
okay.
Allow
okay.
Jason, I have another question.
Yes.
Which I maybe is here in my limited knowledge of technology. How does the county tie up with what they've sent to you? When we get the electronic CRV.
Well, you'll get a PDF in
with,
the
right,
recording
the
package.
When we get the PDF in the package and we print it.
You print it.
And we give it to our auditor or assessor, whoever handles it in our counties. How do they tie it up with the information you already received?
We don't.
You don't need to do that?
We aren't keeping the information on our end.
You're not keeping the county information on your end.
We didn't even receive it.
No, we don't. We are not actually receiving the CRV in that way. We're not persisting it in our database at all. That's part of the compromise.
Where's the Social Security number? Yeah.
Well, the Social Security numbers are kept. That's the only piece. And so the CRV ID is there. That's where the tie is, the CRV
okay.
ID.
With the Social Security number.
Right.
But the information that the county data selection that goes
and
to the
all
county,
the other submitter information.
And submitter information.
It's not being reviewed at the state level at all.
This is only county information.
Does it have to
be data entered into your system at all?
Well, it's going to be following the paper process. that it currently exists from the county to the state.
So the assessor keeps it in their office, does their data entry, and it stays there until they pick it up or review it.
That's what I'm understanding, but so how do you tie it into what the electronic version that was sent to you?
Well, we aren't keeping that version.
They're not doing any of that electronically. They're doing it all paper, just like the county is.
That's okay. The full ECRB.
So why are we doing the number?
Well, it's just part of the current ECRB process.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So we are trying to leverage the ECRB process as much as possible to allow e-recording in the short run.
Are you having built into the technology, if I'm a submitter, if I skip a field, will it make me have to fill the field out?
The form is exactly the same.
So you do have some enforced rules that I've got to complete everything or it won't be accepted and I can't print a PDF?
The rules are exactly the same as they are for the full. It is the same form as the full ECRB.
Okay.
What's different is the receipt page that you get, the PDF that you get, and what happens to the information afterwards.
Janine, they're getting the electronic data. They're just choosing not to do anything with the electronic data.
Right, at this point.
If they wanted to, they could, but they're not going to, because it would take...
I understood that, yeah.
Jason, one question about entering in the data. For a submitter, say, they enter enough to obtain the ID number, but fail to save the PDF. If they have to re-enter that data to get a new ID number
or a PDF,
for a new PDF and then successfully save that PDF,
yes.
What happens to the information or the data with the old ID number? Is that data, I think we had talked about in previous discussions, where that data is kept by the DOR for so long.
Well, in the full ECRB system, yes, it would just be purged after approximately 90 days.
Okay.
In the e-recording case, there's just an extra row or two in the private data rows that are essentially wind up being ignored.
Okay. Is that going to cause a problem for our clients for whom we may have entered in two CRVs that tie into the same Social Security number or a taxpayer ID number?
I don't believe so. I mean, when you say a problem, I guess I'm not sure what you would mean by that.
An issue or an anomaly where the DOR would have to...
There's no one-to-one tie to, you know, a row of the private data to some kind of action that occurs on that data. There's more of it's used as reference. So we don't go through an audit by CRV IDs. Maybe that's a way of saying it. Instead, if there's a reference to the Social Security numbers, then they would do it. But that's, you know, internal revenue activity that I'm actually not aware of exactly how that works.
Our concern would be that a client would get a notice from the DOR that there were two transactions where they received capital gain for $1 million in each transaction, whereas it was truly only one transaction that took place.
And that would not occur because what would happen is that the tie to the private data is referenced in a CRV ID. There has to be a tie to an actual CRV at that point. Just because a CRV ID exists does not mean that there's an actual CRV. There has to be one that came in through the county process. Right.
Well.
Whether it came in through the paper process or the electronic process.
But if you submit a second one and you've got different numbers on the second one than the first one, it might be discoverable by some attorney if there was fraud involved, if they wanted to go back and try and find a way to pull it out of the file. So rest assured, Russ.
This is Bonnie. I have a couple comments.
Sure. Yes, Bonnie.
This process, the workaround process or parallel process to the paper, whatever you want to call it, I can see where that will encourage customers in the long run to use the actual ECRB process because they're entering in so much data anyway, they might as well do the eCRV process. So I think that's a good thing because it's kind of a step in that direction. But at the same time, if the county that is e-recording does not have the eCRV process implemented yet, it could put more pressure on DOR to implement faster.
That may happen. I think that there's, counties are, once they start getting e-recording pieces, there will be some, desire by that county to use the full eCRV system. Really, we're going as fast as we possibly can to be able to say yes to those counties. And we're not going to be able to speed that up more than what we've done in terms of getting more resources that John mentioned earlier and working on getting counties involved. And that's why we're doing this process in the first place, is because that process has a pace that's actually not entirely at the control of DOR. It's at also the control of the counties. And so we'll have to maybe... ask for the assistance of the ERERC to communicate to counties to be patient if we need that to occur.
This is Bonnie again. Well, I'm just wondering, I have not been in attendance to the meetings or heard the discussion, but I, read the minutes, and there was this other option about scanning the paper CRV. That just sounds like that would be a simpler solution, and it wouldn't end up putting pressure on DOR in the meantime to implement the eCRV process.
Well, there are pros and cons to both processes, and you mentioned one con for using the eCRV piece. There are cons to going the paper route. It introduces an entirely new process that maybe some counties may be reluctant to let go of later when they have the full eCRV available to them. They may say, well, I don't want to implement the full eCRV. I want to keep with the scanning option. The scanning option has other, drawbacks in that it, is perpetuating the paper model. And there are others as well. So I guess we're just, choosing to and this body, the ERERC, made a statement saying that they preferred the option 2, and internally we also felt that the option 2 was all things considered the better choice. But you're right that the option 1 was conceptually at least simpler.
Okay, thanks for explaining.
And I wanted to ask a couple questions. One is to clarify on the submitter. It could be of entity level, say First American level or Burnett title or that type of thing. You're okay with that type of level, not Jeff Carlson at Burnett title.
Yes,
it doesn't have to be,
an entity.
Entity, right. Okay.
And actually, I'm open to suggestions from the industry on how to phrase that submitter to give further guidance. So if you have a suggestion on how to reference the submitter more clearly so that it helps that, I'm open to that.
Okay. Yeah, we should probably work on some language. It's pretty clear.
Good, yeah.
The other question I have, because I know for us and a lot of the people submitting, one thing we do try to do is not to pass that Social Security number around or keep it as private as possible. In this scenario, do you see people then sending these creations or along with paper submissions outside of e-recording?
Well, once they put in using eCRV, the private data is stripped off. So I'm not sure what you mean.
What I'm saying is, say, for instance, you create one, you print this out as a PDF like you were going to go
yes.
for e-recording, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I can't e-record because maybe it's a document I can't. Can I package this up and send it
as paper?
As paper, or, like I say, some people will say, gee, this is a nicer system, or I know for sure that CRV is going to be filled out completely every time because
right.
it's electronic. And the way you've set it up.
Well, that's why I think we're going to wind up having to let people use this as the front-end replacement to the form, even if in advance of the full ECRB, even though we're saying we aren't currently. But a county that is registered to say we can do e-recording, they happen to get a paper version in their inbox of the ECRB form, probably could just go ahead and accept that.
Because if it's, it would be the same, if I'm sending something to Martin, essentially Kay would print that out and just pass that along to her department, which is essentially the same as sending his paper in the first place.
Yeah, you're just saying that, you know, in this case it wasn't via an email.
Right.
It was because someone walked it in and printed it for the county.
Correct.
Yep. And, you know, our guidance would be that this should only be for e-recording at present. But, you know, if a county were to accept that, there's really, A, nothing that we would know about it anyway, and B, no harm would be done, really.
Okay.
I think the only issues on that would be the fact that we would have to match that ECRB up with the document itself in paper like that, that format.
You'd be sending me an email.
You'd be sending me the paper.
I'd send it a printed version right on top.
That would be currently the case. You have to accept it with the deed one way or the other anyway.
Right. I wouldn't want it coming in as a separate piece to match it up with something coming in.
Because it's got different questions on it and stuff. I mean, you'll know it's different.
Oh, yes. But because it's an e-recording company or county, they're going to be getting these anyway, so we wouldn't know whether it came in as an e-recording piece or not. We would assume it did, but we don't really know.
It would just look different.
Right.
No, it's going to look different anyway. See
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right, right. No, I meant it would look different than the paper one.
But there's two types of ones that look different. One that were actually transmitted via e-recording, and the this case where it was actually just walked into the county office, we wouldn't know the difference.
Jason, one of the issues that has been of concern to the customers, and this is why I view this as so attractive, is they would like to get away from using the typewriter.
Sure.
This makes it possible for those that are electronic recording to get away from using the typewriter for those that they electronically record with. But I will tell you, the minute we leave this room, everyone in this room is going to say, you've now made it possible for me to do all of my documents that way. And that's what they all prefer, and that's why I'm excited about this even more so than you can imagine.
Well,
and it's going to happen even faster that way, which I don't have any problem with, and I think you're to be commended for.
Yes, but we are not prepared to support that process if it spread that quickly, and that's why we are asking that people register and let us know. Because the system will clog up and break down. If it goes that quick. So we're asking for the help of the ERERC. We're asking the help of all the counties that want to do the e-recording process. We're asking the help of the submitters that want to do the e-recording process to please go through this a little bit more methodically. And as the system works itself out and we feel comfortable about expanding it quicker, maybe we can. But it's all sort of a simultaneous race of trying to get to full ECRB as well.
Okay. Chris has had her hand up a lot here, so let's just...
I have a practical question.
Yep.
Where is this going to be? I'm looking at your website. Where is it going to be housed on your website?
It'll be in the same location. You'll get to it via the same URL as the current ECRB.
Okay, that's what it is.
And in fact, all that's really different is that when you go to select the property, the county of sale... that once you select the county of sale, if you select a full ECRB county, you'll get one receipt page, and if you select a county that's an e-recording accepting only county, you'll get a different receipt page. So up until the moment of the receipt page, it's identical process.
And I was just going to say, and as far as, say, Dakota, their process is unchanged.
Correct.
And that's as it was, and that's...
And let me tell you, that makes writing the documentation for this difficult. Because what we're saying is that for counties that are doing e-recording only, that don't use the full ECRB system, they have to register and they can do this.
Right.
But if you're a county that's using the full system, the process is different. You use only the CRB ID. So, and then for every other county, it's, please, you need to continue to use papers. It makes it difficult to not cause confusion in the documentation. We did the best we can on that, and hopefully when you start working with it, and that's why we need to go through some testing as well. So we want to work through, and so we're being aggressive on our testing by saying, well, let's start testing with four counties as quickly as possible. And that'll take some of the pressure off the people that want to do e-recording also, because, you know, but we'll do the testing in the sandbox, and we'll hopefully go to production, you know, relatively quickly. But we certainly want to try to limit confusion. So any things that we learn about the way we describe the process to people, or the way the receipt page is presented, or the way that the registration process occurs, or the PDF that's printed at the county side and how the county walks that through their process is valuable, you know, information. And that's one of the whole cons about doing this in advance of full ECRB, because there's a whole different little learning curve here. It can cause confusion in the full system, as Bonnie pointed out.
Yes, Kate?
I'm real excited about this. I'm wishing for this and been real excited about this. And since my volumes in Martin County are so high compared to everybody else, if I get a deed from my vendors here, or my submitters here, hopefully you'll do this quickly. I really would be excited. Maybe one a month would be good. I'm just asking you guys.
Please try it out without him.
Yeah, I'll squeeze a few out. You're going to do a testing right away. I think maybe my question is, too, we need to have this process communicated to, of course, the submitters, but then also to the county side, too. So we're going to have to work on some type of communication, if we do it on the listserv, or if we do we could hook up a phone call pretty quick and do a conference call or something. We do
and
need to have some education on this.
What I see happening is that we're working through the county specifically on the test piece. So the four counties that I mentioned before, and the counties can then communicate to the submitters that they want to involve in that testing process. And then even when they go to production, they sort of said, well, you submitter A, B, and C, we want you to use this. And then the county began to, because this is what happened in Dakota, Dakota went through this process of educating and making it awareness to the different submitters that are out there.
Submitters.
You know, I don't think you probably need to, at least early on, do any overt advertisement of this to the submitter community. My feeling is that it'll probably start happening by itself faster than we need it to. But once you go to production, if the production is that there's submitters that you know that could be using this to e-record, we can do some activity there to try to
I certainly think that there would be some submitters out there that would really like to know about this happening in Minnesota. I've pulled some statistics here from Simplifile gave me this, and this is just what Simplifile does. And it shows an example of Wisconsin, North Dakota, and Minnesota. I'll pass this down. You can kind of take a look of when that. It shows a couple different things. When the deed was first allowed into these other states, and it shows the comparables of, say, this is Wisconsin down here. This is North Dakota, which just started up with the deed. Well, just started up. And Minnesota, too, when we started up with the deed and our increase. But you can see Minnesota's right on the top. I think this whole graph will change entirely once we get this deed in process. I think you're going to see a whole lot more green of Minnesota showing up.
Well,
on
and that's
so.
One thing that we're a little concerned about is
too fast.
Because we really do need counties to tell us explicitly that they want to do this, and we need submitters to tell us explicitly that they want to do this.
Right.
And after we know that the system is going to work well, if we've gone to production with four counties and we want to then go ahead and expand to say, well, I got a list of 15 more counties that want to go ahead and sign up, you know, we'll know that it's working with the four counties that went to production early, and then we'll expand it out to those, you know, 15 or 20. We need to phase this a little bit just so that we don't get caught.
You do understand also that what do we have? How many counties do we have e-recording in the state? 27. So, you know, we have 60 counties out there that are just kind of, we keep hearing the comments, well, when the deed, we can do the deed, then we'll do it.
I
so there are... quite a group of people sitting out there waiting just for this to happen. So it might happen quickly, too.
Well, hopefully there's no glitches, and maybe we can be getting to that level by the end of the year.
It'd be very nice to see that.
I mean, Bill, and then Larry, and then Janine here. Let's, Bill?
Jason, I didn't hear Sherburne mentioned in that list of test counties. Is there a
Well, right now they have been working on the full ECRB testing thing, and actually they've all been in their court for some months.
My understanding is they're past that, but I don't know if there's a.
Well, they've never. What I'm waiting for is their login requests. They give me their list of logins, then they would be able to log in and test the county side of the ECRB process.
So they would follow Dakota's path, not this.
They could do a parallel thing. I mean, it's possible that they could also test the recording piece. But I didn't put them on the top of the list of the four counties since.
If I get a ball of Shell and talk to her, can she call you and get on the list?
Possibly. I mean, I have to, you know, we have to make sure that we're just not going too fast. So. You know, right now I've identified four counties, so if the fifth county wants to come in, I'm not going to guarantee you that I can put them on the list right away. I have to work through the four, and then we can work through the next group and the next group.
And my second question is, what you said you expected in a couple of weeks to be able to do this. Have you got any sense for what you would like to see optimistically for these four counties, the test period? I know that's really difficult.
Yeah, I think you know, it's totally dependent on what we learned. If there's some minor changes to the documentation, maybe we can go to production, you know, fairly, you know, quickly. But if there is some tweaks to the process, the PDF needs to change for the county to feel comfortable doing their end of it on the paper side of the process. You know, maybe we have to do a pause. You know, we think that it's fairly well vetted out in terms of thinking it through, and we're optimistic that there's not going to be, you know, a major glitch. It's really going to be a communication process because, you know, when we go to production is how far along we feel that are all the counties ready? Are these four counties ready? Well, that means talking with them and making sure that they understand the process. So that's probably what's going to be holding it back more than anything at this point.
Larry, you're next.
So what were the four counties again, Jason?
Clay, Martin, Lyon, and St. Louis.
St. Louis is not e-recording.
I don't think St. Louis is e-recording yet. I don't think they're the process. So you might want to pick
your paper county, we volunteer.
Okay. So noted and okay.
And you're now hearing that from the auditor, treasurer, recorder, registrar, and assessor supervisor in Anoka County. So. Janine, we're back to you.
Yeah, my only comment was to Kay is that I see that once we are testing this in the small counties, that Jason will see that it does work. We won't overload him so much, and then those other 27 counties will be able to slip in there with the fact that in the beginning it will take time to grow. We're going to get it 2 or 3 or 4 months from the counties that are or the submitters that are e-recording. Then our vendors have to go out there and they have to build up the business to get more submitters, more people to submit through them, and it will just grow as it goes. That we won't be bombarded all at once with all of our documents being recorded this way.
Well, along those lines. I had a request from ERER in January to get a list of those counties. I do not know what the list of the 27 counties are. So if you could email that to me, that would be very useful so that I know who might be registering in the future.
Jason, along with what Jimmy just said, we're happy to help educate along with your process. So that's something that's very easy because it's submitter by submitter, install by install. So you give us the instructions, and it's very easy for us to educate and get that message out.
And hopefully what we will be posting on the site, when that becomes available on the testing site, will be suitable. And if it's not during your testing, let us know how it can change or improve.
And Jason, you have to remember, we're a very, very quick learning group. We learned to beat them into submission.
Got big shoes to fill, Kay.
But Janine walks softly but carries a big stick, so yeah. Anyway, other questions from the audience? Any other members on the commission? Any other questions for Jason? Let me ask, have you given any thought relative to assuming we do some pilot testing for 2 weeks? We asked about a date. You know, is this something that could go live as early as sometime in August?
Yes.
Okay. Early August? Now we're getting down to...
You said could go live in August. Let's just stay with that one.
Early August? Could go live in early August?
Mike, I'm having to come home from vacation now.
Oh. Well, when's your damn vacation over and you can go live in Lyon County, huh?
December 31st.
I think it's really in the best interest of this body, as well as revenue, as well as the other counties, to make sure that the testing process is...
We want this to work.
...is going
to
work
and
well.
We want this to be a success.
And so if that means making sure that we've crossed those T's and dotted those I's, you know, through August, and then we can go to production and then know that we can actually add the other 27 counties in short order, that's probably better time well spent than saying rushing to production with one or two counties in early August just to say we did it in early August.
I'm just thinking about those border counties that might... might like to compete with their brethren up in North Dakota and that sort of thing. But
Clay, if they're testing... You know, now testing doesn't necessarily mean that they only stay in the sandbox. They might be able to, you know, that's why Clay's on the list.
Okay, gotcha.
I think Bonnie is
thinking about me.
We're always thinking about you, Bonnie.
The floor. I would just like to say thank you to Jason and John at DOR and ERERC and everybody that's worked on this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie. Any other questions? If not, I'd like to just, Jason, you know, certainly on behalf of the commission and John and the entire Department of Revenue, I just applaud you and thank you, and we're just very excited to hear what you had to share with us today. And I know you're going to find counties anxious to test for you and give you feedback, and we will get you the e-record counties. I'm sorry if we haven't gotten you that, so we will get you those. And again, I thank the vendor community and our submitters for sticking with us here. I'm a little bit late on this, but very, very good. And you've got our unmitigated full support for moving ahead with the testing and so forth. So thank you much.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Mike, what do you expect for like a feedback to this group? Who's going to do that for us, do you think? Or should we do that after the submitter county to get a couple of representative test counties?
One of the items that it brought to my mind here is this whole issue about communication. I mean, it just, we've got a whole lot of things that are possibly going to go on here in the next month, and how do we get all that communicated? And that's part of the feedback here. I mean, it's both to submitters, it's to counties, it's to vendors, it's just to our own membership groups and respective constituents here and that sort of thing. And I think we need to perhaps spend a little time thinking that through a little bit.
It's mid-August.
It's August 19th.
So I don't know if that's too soon, but that'd probably be the timing would probably be very good to at least say, here's where it's starting, here's the next potential 23. here's where we're going, and this is how this is
right.
happening. And, you know, even if we could have a demo of the system, I don't know if DOR wants to go to or Grand Rapids. Is that where
it's, no, it's right outside. It's Gull Lake and Brainerd.
Brainerd.
And the board meeting is at 9 o'clock that Thursday morning or the.
Jason, did you want to go to Brainerd? It's a nice resort location.
When was this?
August 19th and 20th.
Correct.
I'll have to look at the calendar. Yeah. What's the meeting?
It's the Minnesota Land Title Association.
Okay.
So it's all of this statewide. It's all agents or significant portion of the underwriters, and a lot of the major agents are there, and a lot of the smaller ones. It's a good spot.
Send me information about the meeting, and then I'll look at the calendar and let you know.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, that'd be a great spot to start. It's a Friday, Saturday, right?
It's a Thursday, Friday.
Friday, that's right.
Thursday, August 19th, and then Friday, the 20th, sorry.
We guarantee good weather.
19th
The 19th doesn't work for us.
No, we're going on the 12th.
Yeah, we're going on the 12th, but that's because we couldn't do the 19th.
You couldn't do the 19th.
No, you couldn't do the
19th. I couldn't. Oh, all right, maybe I can't. I don't know. Janine is not my keeper, my job.
I just didn't want to give up my vacation.
Thursday, what, Friday? That could be. 20th. We have two days.
It's 2 days, Thursday and Friday.
Okay. They usually have the general assembly meeting on the second day, so that
right.
might be an opportunity if the first day doesn't work.
Which would be the 20th.
Yes.
Now, the agenda has obviously already been prepared, but if you're available, Jason, I'm sure they can work it in. So, that's for sure.
I'm so happy you guys are happy.
We won't rain on your parade.
Okay.
As far as counties, though, we've got the listserv.
I think that's probably the best way to communicate with our membership is using that.
And we also could very easily set up a conference call. Chris, doesn't Mako have now a conference call separate?
I believe we do, yeah.
From what e-counties or from what the MOM system has, we could use a MOM system too, and we could very easily do that. Ben could, you know, put on a show for us very easily to demonstrate that too. So,
talking about a webinar now.
Yep, you do a mini webinar very quickly.
Janine.
The other thing is that when I was talking to Jason. He told me that it was fine to invite counties around us to come see it when he's presenting it to us. And we know that all the counties aren't going to jump right in because some of them are not e-recording yet. But just the education of seeing it, being able to go back and think about it, being prepared. And I suggested to Jason that then he didn't have to look at coming back out to educate those counties again to be able to start up. Because they would have already been exposed to it, and there would be county close that was doing it if they needed to bring people to look at it. So,
and to be clear, we're going not. It's primarily a full ECRV meeting with a component about the e-recording piece as well.
Right.
Since you know, Lion can be proceeding towards the full ECRV piece, but there's also an e-recording component in terms of the discussion. So. When I'd be talking about it with the other counties, I probably, unless there was one in particular that wanted to talk about e-recording, I'm really there to describe ECRV.
And so the education part is if when we're looking at our pilot counties, if they can bring people in around them, then it will grow slowly, just like they would like it to do. You know, somebody then has to go home and talk to their, you know.
I still think we really do need to have a full awareness. I mean, all 87 counties need to know this is happening. I don't think we need to invite, and I don't think you're saying this, maybe not, but I just don't think we need to say this little group knows about it and that the other 50 don't.
I'm not saying that.
I think we need to get this broadcasted out there that this is available.
But
and these are good ideas to do these things. But, you know, when's your next prep meeting, you know? I mean,
September.
Yeah. Well, August 12th. Janine's already got a date with him.
But if we need to do this in increments,
that's true. And the prep meetings at least educate all
the submitters
and reporters.
Yeah. I mean, there are many other opportunities for us to communicate, and so we're trying to take advantage of those as we become aware of them and do them. And part of that education is to say, well, you know, not everyone can sign up right at this moment, right?
Right.
So,
And you know, we need to be sure the assessors are brought in. We're thinking about e-recording. They're thinking about the full CRV and what effect it has
right.
on the assessors.
And so, your auditor.
Huh?
And your auditor.
And auditor, right. So we need to know that all those people are being brought into the picture as well. You know, so like when I sent out that we were going to have it on the 12th, I said bring anyone who touches the CRVs to see what, you know, might be happening down the road. Like I said, then they have to go home. They have to get their back in to be able to work together to be accepting of it too. So that's why I'm saying I'm not sure. Yes, they should all have the information. I'm just not sure we're ready for the webinar. Everybody should know it's available out there and see what the program has to offer. I'm just not sure that it can grow as quickly as tomorrow, you know, because of all the conditions.
I guess one suggestion that you could do, if you want to separate the full ECRB from the e-recording piece, is that you have a line of communications to all the 27 e-recording counties. You could draft something, and if you wouldn't mind running it past me to make sure that it, you know, is saying sort of the right thing, then you could send it from the ERERC saying, here is what's happening and here is available, or give us the list and Revenue will send something out to the e-recording counties as a way of introducing them to what's occurring for the e-recording process and to, you know, request patients. But that, you know, counties that were interested in beginning going could register their interest back with us, and here's the way to do that. You know, that's certainly a way that we can communicate for the e-reporting piece. We've been communicating the ECRV process for a long time, so everyone knows that there's a full ECRV project going on. And so what I've been doing is contacting on a sort of a county by county basis and then meeting with counties. And where I go to a county like Otter Tail, that's when I called up Clay and said, hey, you're close to Otter Tail. Let's have a combined meeting. When I go down to maybe Blue Earth soon, we'll maybe involve Martin, Blue Earth, and maybe one other when we do that. Wabasha is interested, and so I already met with Olmsted, but, you know, there's group in Washington. When we meet with Washington, maybe there's another county or two locally that wants to get involved. So as we roll out the full ECRV, we can be coordinating that way. You know, part of the issue there is that it's a steep transition. So even counties that I've had that meeting with Olmsted, for instance, you know, I met with just prior to the last ERERC meeting, they haven't yet requested their logins, just like Sherburn. I met with Sherburn in February, but they haven't requested their logins. They just aren't ready to make the transition. And Olmsted is taking a few weeks too. So it's really you know, once we have this meeting and present the application in front of them, counties sometimes take a long time to decide to make the transition from their existing paper process that they know and not necessarily love, but they know. And so that's why that process requires a little bit more hand holding. And that's why you can't just open the floodgates, because suddenly we'd be besieged, and we just do not have a support staff. I mean, I'm sort of it, you know, for getting counties to help them walk through that process.
Janelle?
Well, just for initial communication, the minutes of this meeting, are they distributed to all 87 counties, recorders, auditors, directors?
I can answer that. I mean, we distribute the minutes to stakeholders that have indicated interest. But and then I don't know on the MACO side of things.
I'm looking right now and I don't see anything. But there is a link to the Legislative Coordinating Commission off the MACO site. So yeah, they're all on there. Mm-hmm. So you know.
We could send it for them to check.
Well, I think we need to send something out there to check, because for me, to initiate searching a site to search to another site, I wouldn't do it because I'm too busy. So it has to be in their face, or you know, knock you on the head, slap you in the face before it, you're going to do it.
Okay. Well, then it should maybe just be an automatic listserv.
We could do a listserv.
Right. Well, after the meeting, when the minutes are ready, there should be a note from the chair.
Along with a copy of the minutes to all the recorder auditor
just the link to the minutes would work.
Just the link.
The same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Through MLTA to get that out.
Jason, I'm assuming that
can I backtrack? The minutes aren't approved until this meeting.
Right.
Right.
So those are draft minutes.
Right.
Sure. Well, that or else
just put draft
recap
on the top. That's fine.
Just recap.
And let me take a look at them before we. I'm right.
And typically,
90%
I mean,
of the time,
we just. I mean, typically, it's something where it's a week before
the meeting. Yeah. Right. And normally, most don't publish their minutes till they've been approved. I mean, our boards never do. Mm-hmm.
It should be before you post.
You can do a recap, though. You know, maybe just a brief point by point thing.
Rather than send the minutes, we could do a recap of this segment of the meeting. It wouldn't be called minutes, but it might have similarities to what the minutes might look at like when they come out. We'll talk, Diane.
Okay, just remember we have limited staff.
Yes.
I just
limited staff. And we have many duties, too.
What I see is it does not have to... It doesn't have to be a step-by-step process. It just needs them to be aware that it's going to be available.
Right.
You know, not...
Jason...
Not step-by-step.
I'm assuming if any of the prep chapters around the state wanted to schedule a special meeting for all of the counties in their geographic area, that you would be amenable to probably come out and present where we're at in terms of the full CRV rollout and then the parallel process for...
I think that would be very useful.
Because I'm thinking even, you know, Jennifer, before you run out, that, you know, there might even be some advantage to consider a Metro special prep meeting on just this topic at some point other than when they're regularly scheduled, seeing as how Janine already has a date with Jason on the 12th of August.
I did talk to Jason and his colleagues that we're going to work something out for the 12th, but we could do a more extensive meeting too. People would like that.
It's just that, you know, no one else has presented. I mean, so he said that they would send someone, but none of them, you know the side of the discussion. So,
We'll be there.
Good. Okay.
Can I also mention, though, the audio of this meeting is posted immediately after
the meeting.
You know, within the next day.
So if we could link to the audio,
yes,
it's
absolutely.
Nice if you send out some to the listserv. We do have a slight problem with the delay with the person who's supposed to get our stuff out. Doesn't always get it out in a timely manner and fashion from the MACO side of it, not from this body.
St. Joe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just know that sometimes it gets a little... You know, I've got a newsletter I've been waiting a couple of days for already, so...
It took
them
a long time to
get
Jason's.
Yeah.
I'm just going to decide how I can get myself.
Would you like to be in charge of the executive summary after I get the minutes from Diane to get off charge?
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I get them when I get them from Diane, get them to you. We can excerpt what we think is appropriate and add to there too and put something out. Give it to Jeff too, what we're doing.
I go to the quarterly MLTA board.
And what we're thinking about is that when you get the minutes out, we'll take the minutes and we'll massage some things on this segment of it and we'll put that out to our listener folks.
Sure.
And you won't need to worry about that relative to the minutes. And I wasn't thinking about you getting the communication.
I'm sorry.
No. We all understand. Don't worry. I mean, but that's what I was thinking, that we get something out.
Sure.
And then I think we can let people know that there will be some prep chapter meetings where revenue will be attending here around here in the next several months.
Yes.
Very good. You can get them up to your. Then Eileen, you've got the real property council, don't you? At some point.
Well, I mean,
do they really care?
Not at this point. There's only four counties.
Right.
They go through the vendors anyway. I mean, they're not doing the direct recording. They're doing recording
right.
through the title companies. So until
right.
this gets... I do updates with the council meeting, and the next council meeting is in November, and I may have something to say by then, but this is so small right now that it's going to raise expectations and frustrate law firms. And I think that doesn't
and then
make sense.
As far as Terry goes with the bankers community, I don't see this as being an issue for them at this point at all. Because the banks delegate this to somebody else to do the closings for them.
Well, it's the title company. So,
right.
you know, it really is important that the Land Title Association
right.
know.
That's where
the recorders know. But I think it's too soon to do a blast to all the lawyers.
Okay. Well, maybe we get back to our agenda here and back to business here. I hate to spoil everybody's time here, but time is fleeting. So let me go on to the subcommittee reports. Trusted submitters. Jeff?
What we brought up last time was kind of a list of who the trusted submitters are. And with Diane's help, she pulled together this list. And then underneath my pile here. But the list of trusted submitters is out on the website now, so people can see it. At this point, it's ACS, Burnett, Hometown Bank, NGO, Simplifile, and U.S. Recordings. It's the list, current list. We haven't had anyone else that we are aware of that is applied to any county or to become a submitter. Now, that's another issue in itself. And we talked about this communication with the counties as they come on, and if they do have a submitter that they bring on and we're not aware of, we should find a way to get them on the list. So, but I don't think at this point that's a huge issue. The other thing is we've got the memorandum of understanding that is, I'll say, the current form. And Diane, are these out on
That is
well,
not yet.
I think we can probably go through this as well. I know Larry and I had some discussions about this, but the memorandum of understanding, the way we've set it up, is that you sign up with one county and you have that memorandum, and it's good for the whole state. However, we don't really have a spot that we say, once you've done that, it sits here, right? It sits at it could come to us, but again, we don't have the communication to say it.
I think that when we met, the Trusted Submitter Subcommittee met in the fall, but we talked about the LCC, informing the LCC, and then housing it within the ERERC records within the LCC, and we're fine with that. And I think that's that one form is we've Not that form, the other form.
Oh, the other one that we worked on?
Yeah, that has the directions modified on that
right,
one.
Right.
Sorry, our apologies. We just didn't have a chance to
talk. Yeah, we're the inside deal between us two.
So, I mean, we could just keep it within the records, or we could post it to the website. I don't know if it needs to be that way. Form, and it might be something.
I think it would
be available somewhere so that counties can go
uh-huh. right to see if they already are a trusted submitter. Because that's kind of the issue, is to say if NOCA was going to bring say Simplifile on, and they wanted to know is that a memorandum of understanding there, they'd know. Mm-hmm. So we just would need to work on posting that out there. I don't think there's no information that's I'll say. There's no ACH numbers or PIN numbers or anything like that, so I don't think we have any private data. I'm sorry.
On the MACO website, under ERDR Commission, there's a drop-down list of the counties. There are four missing right now. I just sent Mike an email so we can update this. Of the counties that are recording, why can't we have another drop-down list of the trusted submitters there, too? Mm. Can't we do that? Okay.
And
also on the commission site, but I mean, you know, if I get a listing, give me a listing, I'll get it up and on the website.
Okay. It's the MACO site.
Thank you.
On the MACO site, sure. Mm-hmm. And like I say, and we don't even have to put the memorandum. We could just state that they've submitted.
Yeah,
here's the list of the counties that have, or the trusted submitters that
have. Yeah, just another drop-down list, just like the counties, and then we know who's doing what.
So maybe, Diane, you and I can kind of work together on
What I remembered, I thought, that we were getting to this point, is that if a submitter signed up with whatever first county they signed up with, and it wasn't going to be identified as that county, but they were basically signing a kind of a open-ended agreement to do electronic recording in accordance with the commission standards, and that they would sign up with that, and that would then be submitted. At the time, we were talking about Secretary of State's office, but I viewed now it should come to LCC. Mm-hmm. And then we at LCC should just have exactly that drop-down list, that submitter now gets put on the list so that any county could go in and see if Simplifile has been approved or has signed up somewhere. And if they have, I don't need to worry about that form because they're already on the approved state list.
I think that's what we're talking about.
That's what that was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's already, and that as of right now is out there.
Is out there.
This list is.
But it's the agreement on how to add more there, too.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we talked about in the fall.
We need just to finish this off so that a county as well needs to say, oh, they aren't on this list, so I need to have this standardized memorandum of understanding, and then I will, that I can pull that down, get them on the list, and then it's done.
Okay. And then the same was for counties.
County recording? I don't know.
There was a resolution or something that we put together that counties could submit to the...
They're supposed to get a resolution from their board saying that they're authorized to do that, and then they're supposed to notify the commission.
They don't need to do that anymore.
But they haven't been doing it.
They don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, I thought...
Statute change.
Okay, that's right. The statute change on that.
Yeah.
They just informed the commission, right? They're ready to
I don't think they...
I think
the question may be, who are the counties that are e-recording?
But I think
who's allowed to.
I think everyone's allowed to.
Okay. Right? Well, that's what I mean. But I mean,
we need to ask for them to notify the commission.
Right. And we had 40 some of them that did do so at one point. Only a 27 or 28 were actually ever electronically recording, but there were about 45 or 44, as I remember, who did sign up and did get resolutions in. Some of them that did submit resolutions, and this is before your time, Diane, I believe this was with SOS, as I remember, and those were at least on the list that they had submitted. They wanted to wait until things got further along. In most cases, they wanted to wait and see how things went so that they could do the whole package rather than just be saddled with, at that point, all we could do were satisfactions and releases and assignments. And I think that's where a lot of the hesitancy came from many of those other 20-some that never signed up on it?
Well, and I think we pushed... We were pushing to get them to get the resolution so that somebody understood how important it was for us to do this in Minnesota. You know, whether they were going to do it right away or not, we were pushing.
Yeah. So maybe some of them weren't as anxious about it as we were, perhaps, then? Okay. Yes, Russ.
And with the memorandum of understanding, if I recall correctly, if a submitter, an originating submitter, is using a vendor to submit, we're also looking for that originating submitter to sign a memorandum of understanding as well. Is that correct?
We hadn't really defined that at this point. It was just the submitting the entity that was actually, say physically, but has the infrastructure to send. It wasn't necessarily so. Burnett were using Simplifile, it would just be Simplifile's okay. Trusted submitter agreement. We hadn't gone to that point.
Okay. And I know that most vendors will also ask of their customers to sign agreements that will keep in line with that memorandum of understanding. So I think there's a chain there. I don't know how big of a concern that would be. If it does get to that point where we need to discuss that, I certainly endorse the single memorandum of understanding for the entire state as opposed to county for county. I will tell you as a submitter in other venues, it is a roadblock for us to electronically record through a vendor in an area where every single county requires you to sign a memorandum of understanding, Missouri being one of those states. So it can be prohibitive because any entity understands, you're going to be looking at every single memorandum of understanding as a separate contract.
Yeah, if we're encouraging the most wide open adoption, we're probably better sticking with the technology vendors, then that would just slow things down. At this point, you know, is there some issue that could arise at some point? Who knows? But I don't know that. You know.
Well, I think the issue always was that the people were sending it, you know, under the standard, they were transmitting it under the standards that the commission had set.
Yep.
So it's the transmitting person who is accountable for that. You know, if you don't give it to him in the way he can transmit it properly, then he's going to say, I can't do it. Or he's going to play with it till he can. But, you know, it's the transmitter who has to work with our softwares to be able to transmit it into each county. So that's where it would seem to me that it would be important that they understand that they have to do it in our way of doing business.
Well, and I think there was also the key piece, making sure that we had worked out an agreement with the county for the
right.
fees.
Yes.
So that was really
good.
Right now, someone signs on to use Simplifile. They also sign a memorandum of understanding. They'll abide by all of the state laws and all of the county rules and regulations as if they're presenting over the counter. So, you know, that is it automatically happens with each submitter sign up. So, I echo what Rob has said. There's a second safety net there if there's already just one in place.
Well, I think it's clear if the commission wanted to just have one. You don't need to do 87 separate agreements. And I think that hasn't changed in terms of the position that we've always had here. So, well, Jeff, you can follow up with Diane on that this month, and thank you very much for getting at it. Let me go to the county recording side, and I wanted to first of all thank Chris for getting updated data here for document recording this year, and unfortunately this has not been a very robust year for recording. I'm seeing the numbers look like most every county is down for the year, which I assume is probably true for all the submitters, seeing as how you are the ones that originate all of this information. But thank you, Chris, for being on top of that again. And then Larry and Chris, I'll just ask you, I'm assuming you have not done any meeting yet.
No, that's not true.
On document types, or have you?
That's not true.
Can I just jump in back on the county numbers before we
yes.
leave that one, please?
Yes.
I had someone contact me with the concerns about the county numbers being on our website, and I know there's been discussion in the past in this group, but I just couldn't remember what the discussion was. Because if you go on the MACO site, you don't need a password. Anybody can go in and see the county numbers. And the concern was that since our totals are down so low that it wasn't a good piece to be viewable to the general public. I believe we had a discussion on that in the past, but maybe not. And what was it agreed to have that on the public side of the website, of the MACO site? Or
it's under the commission part. It was the only thing that was ever discussed was making sure that you had to sign in, use your county ID to sign in to put the numbers into the report, because before that security wasn't there. So that now has been added. The other wasn't requested before. So this is a new request. So the commission will need to direct me. Do you want me to tell Joe to make that private? Or I need to know.
You have to sign into it, right?
Not to get
no,
to the totals.
To enter the data.
To enter
the data, you do, but to get these totals,
before you didn't have
you
to.
Just need to go right in and you can see the totals. And the concern was that they're just out there for anybody, and since our totals are so extremely low now.
Well, I think what the discussion we had at that point, if I remember, it was about the turn times. We were talking about not publishing that and saying, and it was turn
yep.
so many were within this amount of time and this percentage, and then not being specific about county. I don't think we had addressed the volume.
That was the discussion that we had in conjunction with the report
right.
on how we
right.
would reflect that
yep.
there. We didn't have a discussion with regard to the numbers and on the MACO site. I'm of the opinion, yes, I know it's sensitive information, but, you know, for heaven's sakes, it is public information.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a secret that the real estate market has been slow, shall we say,
yeah.
would be being generous.
When it picks up, it'll really look nice on there.
Yeah, I have to agree with this, too. I'm just bringing it forward because I vaguely remember there had been some discussion and I
yeah.
wanted to clarify it, but I'll recontact this person. And
I don't think you can hide the reality. You see it every day, and we see it in, I think, every one of our communities. So
better to err on the side of transparency in this case,
that's
right, rather than to appear to be hiding something.
Yep.
Good point.
Very good point, Sean. Thank you. Well, then, let me get back to Chris and Larry, because they were asked to also begin to look at other document types that we might add to our list for electronic recording. So, do you have anything to report to us?
We did meet.
Good.
Well, we made some pretty good progress. We went through the foreclosure documents, because those are out there on the uniform conveyancing rights. And we did also look at the mortgage modification document, because I think that was one that the commission wanted us to look at, even though there isn't a UCB for that one.
Right.
Because we are seeing a lot of those now, because a lot of mortgage companies are having to fix the mortgages that they originally transacted in order to foreclose on. We're seeing a lot of those.
Yep. That's good. That's good.
So I think we left it at Pam had to do some cleanup work, and then I think she was going to probably send the list to Dean for his initial input. And then once we got that out of the way, I think at the next commission meeting, we would have that available to look at.
That'd be fantastic. That's super. Thank you very much.
We have to also thank Jeff Carlson for allowing Pam to
participate
in this process.
I distracted them in their meeting. Yes, I know that they were working. I came in and I made them completely unproductive.
For a while,
so.
But we needed a break, so it was good timing.
That's super, super. Well, thank you to the committee. That's very, very good work. I think those are certainly the document areas that we're seeing the business in. So that would add to the to the ability for submitters to get us things. And I keep wishing that the foreclosure documents we didn't have to deal with, because I was keep thinking it's maybe going to end and go away, but I'm afraid that that is not the case. So anyway, but thank you for the subcommittee work on that. All right. Next item on the agenda. Well, it's the first meeting after the appointment of new officers every 2 years, as I remember the bylaws, and you did include a copy here for us, or for, at least for me.
It's actually in the statute itself. I don't think it's in the bylaws, but it's in the statute, and I just reviewed the statute.
And we are to select officers every 2 years, yeah, as I understand in reading that. This being the first meeting following that, I guess we're open. And I guess the two officers that we've had are the president, chair?
Chair
and the vice chair. Pardon me. Read my own notes. So that's where we're at. I guess we, board, want to have any discussion, or
would you like a motion?
Hey, motions are always in order.
I'd like to make a motion that the chair remain as Mike Kniff and the vice chair remain as Jeff Carlson.
I'm not the vice chair.
Yes, you are, aren't you?
No.
Who's the
Teresa
is the vice chair.
Is the vice chair?
That would Teresa would remain the vice chair. I'm sorry.
Well, there is a motion for appointment of chair and vice chair. I
is Teresa on the phone?
Teresa is not on the phone, at least unless Teresa is called in. No?
She had told me that
she had a special meeting. Yeah. I saw your email here, right?
Before this one.
Before the meeting, yeah. But she got called out on again today, so... there's a motion for appointing Mike Kniff as chair and Teresa Bolver as vice chair. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Jeff Carlson seconds the motion. I guess it needs to be open for discussion then. Any discussion?
Should Teresa agree?
It would probably be good if Teresa were willing to do so. I've not talked to Teresa. I'd understood she was going to be here today, but anybody else talk to her?
I don't know. I always thought you'd
phone
again whoever wasn't there.
It's in our bylaws.
It's in your bylaws.
Yeah. Phone in whoever doesn't show up.
I just wonder, you know, it seems like this has been difficult for Teresa to make
She's
it here.
Had some difficulty.
And do we need somebody who's more actively involved? Because if you're not here for a particular meeting and she's not available, I mean, I tend to favor moving Jeff into that position just so that we really do have a backup for the chair. Because it seems like Teresa's schedule is just really difficult. And I know other folks at U.S. Bank with the same issue.
She's had a lot of difficulties here this past year, yes. And it has nothing to do with Teresa. I mean,
it's U.S. Yeah, I mean, they're just really
demands on her time in that sense, yeah.
And I think it's a good point. I mean, how can we elect her when she can't consent? And if it's something we need to do today, then I'd go back to the original motion.
Amendment?
Who seconded the motion?
Jeff.
Okay. Trying to get who?
Procedure, can we offer an amendment?
Sure.
So I could offer an amendment to the motion?
You want to amend your own motion?
Can I amend my own motion? It's parliamentary procedure.
Can withdraw your own motion.
I can withdraw it?
Mm-hmm.
So I could withdraw my motion then?
Would the person that seconded like to withdraw their seconding then too? I suppose you need to have both of them to withdraw.
Sure.
Okay, so the motion to appoint Mike Kniff and Teresa Volver as chair and vice chair has been withdrawn. So, any further discussion on the part of the commission?
Even separately, that explains why you're withdrawing him.
Pardon me?
Even separately, that then explains why you're withdrawing him.
The chair, you mean, and then the vice chair? Yeah.
Right. So why don't we go back and discuss the ability to select a chair and then select a vice chair separately. So anyway, further discussion? Anybody want to make any motions?
I'll make a motion that we... Mike Kniff to remain as a chair.
It's been moved to nominate Mike Kniff as chair.
Second.
Is there a second? Seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none. Do I hear a motion to close the nominations?
Are you trying to back out of this or something?
I would be willing to do it again, yes. I've enjoyed the last couple of years with a group of people here. It's been, yes. If that's what you're wondering, yes. Hearing no other nominations, I will presume that the nominations are closed. Is anybody making that motion?
Move to close the nominations.
Okay. It's been moved to close the nominations for chair. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Jeff. Shall we move to the vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That's done.
Except, do we actually have a quorum here?
Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah.
We do have a quorum.
I was trying to think of how many members.
Yes,
four.
One, two, three, four, five.
No, we have more than a quorum.
We have five, and we had, yes. Is there a... let's turn our attention to the vice chair role. Any motion or discussion concerning the nomination for a vice chair?
I'll make the motion to nominate Rick Carlson as vice chair.
It's been moved to nominate Jeff Carlson as vice chair.
Second.
It's been seconded by Eileen Roberts. Any discussion? Do I hear any other nominations?
Yep.
I'm not even going to ask him whether he's willing to do it. If not, I'd entertain a motion to close nominations.
So moved.
It's been moved to close the nominations. I would second that motion. Shall we move on to the... Well, all those in favor of closing the nominations for vice chair, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to close is in favor. Now we can go on to the vote. All those in favor of Jeff Carlson as the vice chair for the commission for the next 2 years, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations, Jeffrey.
Thank you. It's time for speech.
Oh, it's after 3:30.
Limited time.
Moving right along, let's go right on to the future meetings. We did talk about meeting dates, times. We've had a little problem here in the past. Pardon me?
The meeting dates, the future ones up until December.
Are listed, and they are the third Thursday of the month at 1:30 in the afternoon. And I did indicate that we would discuss that a little bit because I know we've had some conflicts here in the last number of months. Some.
And I'm sorry.
With building location, and I know some with our staff here, and I don't know if this is a good time or not for staff.
This is fine, but I think that there was also some discussion about the frequency of the meetings then, too.
Yeah. So. Yep. We need to have them monthly. Do we not need to have them monthly? There have been times in the past year where I didn't think we probably needed to have them monthly. I think at the present time with where we're at, I think we probably need them monthly with the CRV coming online. I wouldn't want to do anything to not have them already scheduled. Just knowing where we're at with our friends at the Department of Revenue and how we want to make sure that that keeps moving along.
The one thing
it's always easier to cancel them when they're already scheduled than it is to schedule them when they haven't been scheduled.
We have our MLTA on the 19th, which Jason and Jason may possibly be there the 20th. He's going to be with Janine on the 19th, right? Or can't be on the 19th. He couldn't make
it. He couldn't make it the 19th, but that might have been because it was the, is that the date of the ERER meeting?
Yep.
That may be why he told me he couldn't. He may have thought he was going to be here.
Okay.
So he just said he said he could do it the 12th, and he couldn't do it then until the 26th. So today we discussed he's going to do it the 26th so that he can go to the Metro prep meeting.
Okay.
And I can stay on vacation.
Because I was going to say, I would be willing to move the August meeting if that was an issue to get you guys to have him available for your prep for your MLTA. Because I think that would be very, very beneficial if he was able to be there for that. But you said you could maybe do it the 20th also.
Well, the 20th is actually when the bulk of the meetings go. The 19th would be the board meeting at 9 in the morning. And then actually the afternoon is open just to for vendors and there's a social event, right? Actually, pontoon ride.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But so the 20th, if Jason was going to come, would probably be that. But I don't know that Jason, is Jason here at the next meeting?
I don't know if he's to be.
Needs to be.
I would think he would need to be because we'll be probably putting some of this out.
We will continue to invite the Department of Revenue, I think, on a monthly basis for an update. We don't want them to think that they aren't important to us.
I would say more likely than not if he's at the end of the day, that would be on the 20th.
Right. So I'm just thinking if we push it to the 26th, then we know we've kind of eliminated all of it.
Well, but Janine just made a deal with him on that.
Oh, that's 26.
Thank you.
26.
Okay. So.
We have legislative meetings, I think, on the 26th.
Oh. Well, except for that the only conflict with the MLT. Well, Jeff, are you going to MLT?
Yeah, I believe I am.
Okay, so you wouldn't be.
But that, I mean.
You're the new vice chair.
Yeah, I know.
All the pressure.
Could you move it to a Wednesday or a... So we can cancel and go right into September. Do you think we should do that? What's that?
I won't be here September, but I can call, maybe come. Maybe can't come.
Or just make it a week earlier in September and kind of cover it right here. The 9th?
That might give the Department of Revenue a little time to be out to Otter Tail and to Lyon and then be able to have some feedback on
the testing results and so forth. If that
work get up and running.
So cancel the August and then move the September to 9th.
I can do that on my calendar.
So no meeting in August, meet in... Yeah, classes start August 19th, so this would be better.
It's Labor Day. That's the Labor Day.
Labor Day is September 6th.
So Janine's back on vacation by then, maybe.
Might not be. I might be going on another one by then.
So September 9th?
September 9th, that's a Thursday. Is that a doable time?
I might have grave harvest, but don't worry about that.
I don't know what my calendar is actually right now, so.
Mm-hmm. So, I can't plan my grape harvest. I'm sorry. when it's ready. It's like coffee, you know.
Yes.
Okay. And if it is, I mean, I'll try to come back, but it's usually a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It depends on how big the grape harvest is. I don't need to talk about my personal business.
Why? I do.
If you bring us wine, you can.
How many bottles?
Yeah, that's right.
Is 2010 going to be a good year? Yeah. A lot of rain.
Not, well, you
I guess it depends where you are.
Set, by the way. Yeah. So, I'm not exactly sure. I just don't know in September sometimes. It's usually the second week in September is when we do harvest, but I don't know. So, anyway. But, I mean, I can try to make here.
16th. I don't have anything on that day.
16th, and then if we...
There's a PREA board meeting at that time.
PREA board meeting?
When?
On the 16th.
Oh.
September, that's why.
Is that a fly-in or call-in?
It's down in Raleigh-Durham. So it's 2 days. Board meeting out of state.
Okay.
So, and it's right during the board meeting, so
right,
I hear
right,
it's
right,
one or the
right,
other.
Yeah. Well, then, should we see what the 9th and then see what the, we'll kind of leave it as a tentative 9th? And then we'll see.
Let's, if everybody here at least can do the 9th, let's bet on.
And we might be able to, we have other commissions that we could ask our sister organizations to maybe, they could come in and staff it. It might be where they wouldn't know the history so much,
yeah.
You know, but they could come in and take somewhat minutes and somewhat report.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sally is still going to be with us by the September?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Well, I'll be here through November.
When's the big event?
Let's hope November 20th. Let's hope it sticks that way.
Good tax planning. I like
before
that.
The
yeah,
yes.
That's right. Yeah.
A little write-off. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's change the no meeting date then in August. Everybody comfortable with that? And we'll move to the September date. We'll change to September the 9th, Thursday. And we'll have a notice in terms, but if we, again, we'll do this building here. Anybody still left on the telephone?
I'm here.
Ah. How has the telephone worked in terms of your ability to hear us?
Oh, wonderful. Larry was the only one I couldn't hear, but I knew what his update was, so I didn't really care.
Sounds good, Pam. Thank you. Well, let's do that then,
okay.
And then we'll maintain the other dates in October, November, December at this point that are already on the schedule, the third Thursday, then of the months.
And we can send out an email to the group,
okay,
to the stakeholder group.
All right, that'd be
so
good.
To
let them know.
Okay.
We had one other item under other business. Kay brought up the topic of signatures. Electronic signatures on paper documents and original signatures,
and how people are dealing with that.
What's exactly the issue?
I got another phone call from somebody who had asked their county. She'd gotten documents in that were e-record documents in Model 2, I presume, and the signatures were all, everything was an electronic type of document, and it was being submitted from someone from Texas, and it was I believe a MERS document or something like that. And they were questioning, she was questioning how she can accept that, because she didn't realize that she felt it wasn't an original document.
Is that Pine County?
Yes.
What county?
Your attorney called us.
Okay, you sent me an email. It's reminding me here. Yes, while I was gone.
It's the attorney, the county attorney from Pine County, contacted us because the way I understand it from him, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But their county recorder was getting somebody who wanted to submit things electronically I understood from him that they weren't prepared to receive things electronically. And she was saying that if she was necessary to accept things electronically, the statute says that the county may accept things electronically, the assumption being that they don't have to accept things electronically.
Correct.
I mean, the hope would be when you are up and running all electronically, that would change, you know, in the future. But I explained that to him.
That was not the view that I got from her.
Uh-huh.
And it was the fact that these documents were coming in not as original, for instance, original paper documents.
Well, the question is, I'd understood when I read it, but I did not talk to them. It was an electronic signature that was on the paper document. And are we accepting those?
Well, that passed in Minnesota.
Well, it's not. My question is, it's not real clear how it is passed, and I guess it would be nice to have a summary of how that is clear, because if you look at these two statutes, because I just sent the two statutes to her to say, well, here, go from there. If you're dealing with your county attorney, go from there. It's not my call. You go from there. And I left it at that, and it didn't seem to satisfy them, obviously, and so I should have passed them on. Oh, I could have passed them on to Mike. I should have done that. But in 507.0943, it talks about the electronic documents. And then in 507.24, it talks about original signatures of paper documents. So
And are you talking about in general electronic signatures in general within the state? Or are you talking about specifically electronic, you know, real estate recording?
Real estate.
Real estate specific. That was their question. I think those are the two statutes.
But can the statute change that they can use electronic signatures in Minnesota now?
You're talking in general.
On
all documents, yes. I believe so, yes.
I believe that changed.
It's 3, what is it, 325L?
It seems to me that you know, Minnesota accepted all electronic signatures except on real estate documents. But then I think that was changed that once we accepted electronic recording, we needed to accept.
Well, that's the statutes that
Kay is referring to. The two statutes that I'm referring to, one says the recordable when, and original signatures are required unless otherwise provided by law. So I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to make a column any of this. But original signatures of the party who executed and the notary are basically on the recordable when documents. The other is electronic documents, and of course then that falls with all of the UIDA issues and all of that. So it's kind
electronic
of just
electronic documents are up to the county whether or not they wish to record electronically at this point or not.
But they were sent
That's
in
a discretion.
Paper. But these were
documents. And if you're sending in paper documents with an electronic signature, I'm trying to remember what we had this come up in our county and we dealt with it. And I'm trying to remember, but it was an out of state set of documents. And the issue is, what's the provision in that state? Because that's where the documents were signed. At least that's something I'm remembering. They were trying to treat it the same way they deal with
notary.
Notary, that's the other thing.
The same, yeah, as a notary, what's the requirement in the state in which they were actually signed? And that was the issue that was dealt with, and I don't know, you dealt with that, Eileen?
No, that will not change. Now, would you read these two, and that's where the confusion
is. Another one.
I mean, we need to have, I guess it would be easier for counties to have a statement maybe from
The commission
stating that clarify this area, because if it's coming up, say in Pine County, obviously it's coming up. It's got to be coming up somewhere else.
Should that be clear in the statute? It shouldn't be a statement from EUCR It should be in statute.
But if you read the statute,
I agree.
I'm finding some confusion here.
But maybe it needs to be clarification.
Maybe the commission needs to recommend that the statute
should be changed. I don't think it needs to. Well, you guys are both members.
Well, and there's a whole issue around notaries. I mean, that's the. I mean, just even how you apply your stamp is. It's was the notary stamp electronically?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. And. So, I mean, I thought that was an issue about, because I don't even think you can pre-print a notary stamp on it. It has to be applied, and what is applied, and is printing on a printer applied, and I think there's a whole series of questions around that.
E-notaries, yeah. And where are e-notaries accepted?
Yeah.
And does that state do e-notaries? And
do we have any capacity to request an attorney general's opinion on this? You know, the AG's office will render opinions. Are they our lawyers for this?
Or, Diane, do we use the LCC's counsel?
Our Senate counsel.
Uh-huh. It would sure be nice to have that. Honestly, just industry-wide, it would be nice to have that.
Their legal advisor is the revisor of statutes.
Oh, well, I don't know. It just seems to me that we're a state commission, and that's somebody at the state ought to render an opinion about this. That really isn't our job. And then if the opinion says it's not clear, then we've got a basis for seeking legislative change.
Because I think Kay and I had this discussion as well around, and this may be where we come in, is we had this original set of, the statute was to allow for e-recording with the notary data, right? Because it didn't have to be applied in Model 3. So does that carry over to anything in Model 2 where it's just the information about the notary and that the stamp doesn't actually have to be there because we're already allowing for that in Model 3. We just, because we put in there, it just says, say, State of Minnesota and the text. And so how far can we go with that? Because then if that's the case, then there's a whole, because really what people would like to get to is electronically signed and electronically notarizing. I'm not so certain we're not in a unique situation that since we allow for the notarization of real estate documents and just having the data about the notary in that electronic submission, that we couldn't do something like that on a level 2 where we holographically sign. We have data about the notary, and you know, because we don't have to require them to put the stamp on Model 3. I don't know if that's necessarily Model 3 exclusive, or if one allows for the other. I mean, we may be go back into somewhat of a leadership position again with e-recording if we allow for both. So it's we'd have to get some clarity as to what is allowed because we've got conflicting. Possibly conflicting issues between 2 and 3 would take care of some of the national e-notary issues. I don't know if they are causing problems.
Well, the e-notary issue is still really out there.
It's hot and heavy,
and it's all over in every state, in some variation too. So,
and technically, we don't require e-notary, right? We don't require anything special that says e-notary. We allow data about a current notary to be applied in our Model 3s. It's not, let's say, what you qualify as an e-notary, but it does get sent electronically, which is probably different than having a certificate authority and validating that this is this particular e-notary and have a digital certificate applied to that. So,
well, as I remember the case that we had in our county, there was a digital signature on a document. You know, it's all that encrypted stuff that's 3 lines long and that sort of stuff. And it was done outstate. It was not done inside the Minnesota. It was done somewhere outside of Minnesota. And I'm just having trouble remembering, but my vague recollection was that both the examiner of titles and the county attorney came to the conclusion the same, that because it's an electronic signature, there needs to have some ability to verify. It's a digital signature with a notary, and we have to abide by whatever the statute in that state is with regard to that. And I can't remember. Somehow, as I recall, we ended up not taking the documents.
If they didn't have a certificate of authentication or something with it.
And then I remember there was another issue that came up with one of our submitters, too. I think Ingio had one here several years ago. They had nothing but a paper documents from some submitter. And I can't remember what that was all about. They were trying to do Model 3. We never got to that point. So it became moot, but they had some digital documents. So, well, we're losing our quorum, and I think.
So do we maybe come up with a series of questions? I mean, you've got questions on the notary thing.
Right.
I know Pine had questions. I guess I could follow up with Pine to see what they did do. Is there a series of questions?
Well, and make sure, let's make sure what Pine was. Was it
this was coming in as mine would. What my conversation was, email conversation, uh-huh. was that it was a paper document that would have been an e-record document. Yeah. Her comment was, and I'm.
Was it that they wanted to e-record it,
no,
or was it e-signature?
No, they wanted to record it, and Pine County doesn't e-record.
They don't e-record.
So they were putting that doc in as a. They wanted to put it in as a paper document.
And it had an electronic signature.
It was all electronic. And that was her question. And I said, that's where I pulled up the statute questioning both, because I remember this being a gray area from back before. It always has seemed a little gray to me before.
Kate, so it was a matter of, I mean, it was a matter of accepting the electronic signature. Just
yes.
Electronic signature.
It was prepared as electronic document to be e-recorded. But they couldn't do it, so they wanted it recorded as a paper document.
No.
And he was citing, saying that, well, you accept, you know, electronic signatures instead.
Was it being prepared as an electronic document, or was it being prepared
paper?
That
was my understanding.
They want to record electronic.
It was my understanding it was being prepared as electronic.
But what difference does that make? That's just a question. I mean, that wasn't that I agree. I was looking for.
She was questioning it, whether she can accept that because it does not have original signatures. It does not look like an original document. That was the question. To me, that's how I understood.
It looked
you
like
tried to county attorney. Maybe there was a little.
I don't know.
I think
know,
they
I
weren't
like,
on the same page.
I looked at that. I thought it meant that once we accepted electronic recordings, we had to accept electronic signature.
Okay, then let's go back to statute 507.24, where it says the instrument, it needs the original signatures of the party and the notary public.
But those can be electronic.
But those can be electronic.
Isn't the next subdivision address electronic?
It does.
Right, 507.09.
It says we're not.
Well, we need some definition of the statute then, because it lists in subdivision 2 the original signature is required, and then it states that. And then in under B it talks about electronic documents, including signatures and seals affecting real estate, may only be recorded in conformance with the standards, blah 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 blah. So
the standards that we set.
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
And we're saying that electronic signatures are okay.
When filed electronically, is basically.
But that's the distinction. Have we made that distinction?
Have we made that distinction?
Yeah. Yeah. Filed electronically. Period. I mean, but
she's not filing.
She's not filing, which means that they have to do it the old-fashioned way, because she doesn't record electronically.
Yeah, but it gets back to that may.
So she can take that position because it's a may in terms of recording electronically. The question I was getting at really had not. I mean, if they're signing, you know, with a John Henry, it's just like, can I take a Xerox copy of an original document and it looks the same way? The other issue though is, what about an electronic digital signature?
which doesn't look like
a digital signature. I don't know how far that was.
And that's what had come in to ours, and that's what I didn't know when I read the email, whether it was an electronic signature or whether it was a normal signature but done as a printed copy now.
My understanding, again, was they wanted to submit them, record it electronically, and the county wasn't prepared to record the transaction electronically. So wanted to see if they had the right to refuse it.
Yes.
The whole thing. And like we talked about, and we confirmed that with our the House Counsel, since the statute does say may on it, they may accept electronically, the other side being
the issue to the Pine County thing was simpler. They don't have to record electronically.
Mm-hmm.
But you're then raising the issue of, if you do choose to record, can I submit something electronically? And what are you saying? Or
submit something on paper that was created as an electronic signature, whether that's a holographic signature placed on, and, you know, like you said, more looking like a Xerox copy.
Right.
Do they have to accept that because it's
so? Then the question becomes: how do you know that it was prepared electronically? That gets to be the issue for the recorder. Without if you're going to prepare them electronically, you've got to be able to record them electronically. If you're going to prepare them paper, you've got to be filing paper. Seems to me you can't cross the two, but
I don't know about that.
Otherwise, you get into an awful gray area.
Well, and then that gets to be the same thing. What if you are an e-recording county, and all of a sudden you get a paper document that's signed electronically, right? Do you have to take that then, because you're taking it over here? That can be a new issue.
It's still DNA.
You could take or reject whatever you want.
It's still DNA. As far as
so
the statute
if the county
is.
Says that's fine, I'll take those.
Yeah.
I know there are submitters that love to prepare templates for Model 3 documents, and if they could, prepare them and print them out and send them to counties that aren't currently accepting electronic documents, that would improve their workflow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know the county attorney was interested in having go electronic, but...
There's one other distinction that we have to talk to the industry. There's a digital signature, and then there's a digitized. Mm-hmm. Digitized, of course, limit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can see it mapped out. So, but if it can be verified either way, I know in our system we'll put that it was done digital or done electronically, so the recorder can see that. But the document preparation would be the very, very same. It's just how it was then transferred to the county, whether it was done electronically or sent via courier. Good question.
So that's we need to try to. I mean, that's, I guess, do we have a sit down conversation, or do we have prepare a document? Can we send something?
If I can get help defining the question,
yeah.
I'm still fuzzy on the questions.
Right.
On it. So if we're happy to contact the House or Senate Counsel on
okay.
it. So.
So what we need to do is come up with questions.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Is it as simple as, if a document is prepared electronically,
mm-hmm.
can it be printed and submitted non-electronically? Is that the question?
Well, I'm sorry, if the document
is... If the document is prepared electronically,
uh-huh.
either by way of a template or digital okay. or digitized signatures, can it then be printed out and presented hard copy?
The issue really isn't how it's prepared. The issue is the signature. That's really the issue. Can you accept an electronic signature?
And notary.
An electronic notary?
In
a paper form.
In a paper form, yeah.
That really is the question. Because whether it's prepared paper-wise or electronic doesn't make any difference. It's the signature business.
There's the only thing... Yeah, the only thing is a signature. Because the rest can be prepared any way you want.
I prefaced it that way because you would have the ability to put a digital signature on there if it was prepared electronically. Otherwise, it would be some funky business to try to get a hard copy and then get a digital signature onto it. That you have to run it back through the copier? Or
well, I can do a digital signature on a paper document.
Just embed it.
I mean, people have done that.
That's why I qualified the preparation of it. Because you would have had to have been generated electronically. But the statement is just fine.
It's the signature and the notary that's important.
Yeah, and the difference, Dalen, too, with our level Model 3 is we don't require the digital signature within, is not based on the identification of that person signing it. It's based off of the sending server. So it's we just take in Level 3 is that you can sign it, and there can be text information about who that is, and then it can be digitally wrapped, identifying the sending entity, and that's the digital signature piece, and that's what we allow for. And
it would have to be unwrapped and printed if it's presented over the counter.
Right.
We're on the same page.
Right. Yeah.
But on the other hand, a digital signature and a digital notary is different than what you're talking about.
And we'd have to, like Mike said, it'd have to be identifiable, because I think what he was mentioning was they just gave the hash results of that signature on the document, which is was not identifiable as to who that person is. Although, I'll say most signatures aren't. So, I think there's lots of issues here. So I don't even know if we can adjourn. No form.
It's good to stay here.
You were going to just stay.
September 9th.
Yeah.
I think we will stand adjourned at this point.
But we should prepare some questions for the next meeting, right?
We probably should. Yeah, I guess I'd like it easier for people to. I mean, if the question's coming up in one county and the county attorney's being called is for uniformity's sake and on both sides of the table, I think I'd like some questions and some
clarification.
Yeah. Just so I know how to answer it the next time. When my staff asks me.
When you get one.
Yeah, when I get one. I'm the next one.
Very good. We'll see you all in September, if not before. Most of you I'll see before.
Rob, do you have any ideas about what we're, you know, all that...